Hello. Welcome to Mr. Fishy's Storytime Theater. Grab your earphones, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's story. Today, we'll be listening to Life and Death by user Colin Birdie. I walk the streets of a city. I've forgotten which one. Thousands of years of walking the earth, watching oceans rise and empires fall, and the works of humanity become a blur. Billions of mortals walking around in such a hurry, talking, laughing, loving. They're blissfully unaware that I followed them, my hand outstretched, ready at any moment to guide them to what's next. I appear to each of them just once, in that fleeting, dreamlike moment between waking and the final sleep. I touch their foreheads in the twilight and take them. They are unique in their final moment of submission. Their eyes all tell a story, shining with their last emotion. Some with relief, some with fear, some with quiet resignation. Many with pain. There are a few who greet me with joy, their thoughts turned to lovers and friends who've met me earlier. Those I take with a smile, happy to help them pass through to whatever comes next. And my companion in all this, day after day, age after age, eternity after eternity, is life, the only other of my kind, ageless and eternal, burning light to my darkness. She is my perfect foil, my best joy, and my only sorrow. On normal days, she will let me touch her, and she seems happy to oblige. She's happy about everything. Life, after all, is joy incarnate. But when she lets me near her, it's on her terms, and she feels like a bright ghost to me. She's shining and beautiful and almost under my hands, but there's a distance, a veil between us that I can't part. I try so hard. But she just laughs lightly and kisses my cheek. Her breath is unnaturally warm against my cold skin. Her laughter is meant to be sweet and kind, but sounds mocking to my ears. She tolerates me, accepts me, and on normal days, I'm happy to take her acceptance as love, to take what I can get. But not tonight. It's Halloween, one of the nights when that intangible veil that separates us is so thin that I can forget it's there. On the solstices and equinoxes, on certain full moons, and on Halloween, we become true equals. She feels the change too, and she responds to it, without even being aware, without being willing to admit that something has shifted. As souls give way to the afterlife, as autumn shifts into winter, she yields way to me, and on these nights, I can truly have her on my terms. She appears as she always does on these precious nights, bright shining as the sun. She's a blaze of color and laughter, her radiance not darkened by the cool night or by my presence. I wonder what she must look like to the mortals. Does she appear to them the same way I do, at one defining moment in their life? Do they see her at the hour of their birth, a shining, smiling welcome to the world? Do they see her at the very peak of their life's happiness? If they do, how could they ever forget and move on? What would life be like after having seen the face of life, knowing you'd never see her again? I know the answer to this, of course. Well, I know part of it. I don't know if she ever appears to them in her full glory, but I do know that she visits chosen mortals at her whim, veiled. After she's with me, the smallest portion of her fire is dampened, and for a few hours, she's not quite so radiant and terrible to look upon. She appears to be nothing more than an exceptionally beautiful mortal, and she delights in telling me how she takes advantage of my dimming effect on her. Under my veil, she's weakened enough to seduce mortals without harming them. With a mere word or glance, she takes them, gives them the pleasure she usually denies me. She describes her dalliances in detail when she sees me. She says she tells me so that I can know her, know what life is like among the living. I think she does it just to torment me. And the mortals think of me as the sadist. I hear her laughter like a million bells shaking me from my thoughts. I realize I've been scowling at her and try to relax my face. I start to look around for the first time in hours, or maybe days, wondering where it is we've ended up for this meeting. I laugh too when I see it. We're under a tree, just outside a cemetery. A crowded cemetery, lit with candles and fragrant with the smells of bread and flowers. I can hear singing, some crying, more laughing. What better place for life and death to meet on this day when we're the closest? The mortals walk by us, oblivious to her fire or my frost. I look her full in the eyes and she shines for me. "Hello, life," I say. She smiles and nods, whispering my name. I melt when she says it, almost literally. I can feel my skin warm in the fire of her presence as I walk toward her. She's naked, and perfect as always. I reach out a hand and touch the side of her face, and for once, she doesn't flinch. She holds my gaze and waits for me to make another move. "You're early. You don't usually appear before midnight," her laugh again, music. But she doesn't speak, so I kiss her, possessively, and feel her yield just the slightest bit. She curls against me, pressing her warm body to mine. Her hands running through my hair as she returns my kiss. I look down at her and she smiles back at me, still silent, but now obedient. It's the natural order of things, at least on nights like this, for life to submit so sweetly to death. She falls to her knees, brilliant eyes downcast and illuminating the ground. She is all the colors of the fallen leaves around her feet, all the light of the candles flickering on the graves, all the scents of the flowers. I want her. I reach down and touch her chin, lifting her face up so I can see her. She knows what I want and is quick to give it to me, taking off my dark clothing and taking me into her mouth. The feeling of it is perfection, warmth and comfort and, above all, desire. Her lips move steadily and I twine my fingers in her hair, roughly pulling her closer. She responds to that little bit of pain with a moan, the low vibration of her voice compelling me to move inside her mouth. She senses this and speeds up her movements until I can't take any more. I move my hands to hold her firmly in place while I take what I want from her. Strangled gasps and moans, the feeling of her reflexively moving away but fighting her body and giving in to me. It's too much, so I push her away, not wanting this to end so quickly. I need this night to last as long as it can. She's breathing hard now, lips glistening, still bright as a star. I feel more solid, my movements more deliberate, my desire a sharpened point before me. I grab her arms and pin them down on the ground, and her hips, they rise in answer to my harshness. Stay, I tell her, and she does. Her hands grasp each other above her head while mine explore her body. Soft caresses alternate with the drag of my nails on her soft skin. I can feel the warmth of her lesson with each small gasp of pain. I love it. And I hate it. I'm torn. I want to hurt her. I need to hurt her. And I know she wants it too. But how much can she take? For that matter, how much can I take without changing either of us? It must be so much easier to be immortal and do whatever you want without concern for cosmic balance. She moans, a low, almost mournful sound, and I realize I'm trapped up in my own head again. Fuck the consequences. I growl and fall back on her, teeth on her skin, biting her hard nipple, teasing the other one between my nails. She's writhing and gasping, beautiful, encouraging noises. I'm playing her like an instrument. The marks on her skin are like notes on a page. I run my tongue over them, biting and grabbing with greedy fingers. Suddenly, it feels like she's moving too much, and I need her to be still. Stop. I speak the word, and she obeys. I don't need to, but I pin her down beneath my body and continue my exploration, daring her to try and move again. She does her best to hold still, but can't stop the sounds of her pain and pleasure. I slip a finger inside her, so wet, so willing, and I bend down to taste her. Again, the smell of flowers and bread drifts over from the graveyard, or is it her? I can't tell, and it doesn't matter. One hand digging into her hip, holding her down, one hand moving inside her, and my tongue and teeth torturing her clit until she finally speaks and starts begging me to take her. When I can't stand waiting any longer, I enter her, roughly. As soon as I'm inside, I feel her loosen beneath me. That's the moment I was waiting for. That one perfect moment of pure submission. Her limbs go loose and she lets out a long, strangled moan. I don't revel in her warmth the way I thought I would. I just start fucking her as hard as I can, listening to the sound she makes. They're beautiful noises, tinged with just the slightest hint of fear. Her breath comes even faster now, her bright color shimmering across her chest, the marks I've left on her skin illuminated by her own light. It's breathtaking. Her moans get louder, and I'm struck by the compulsion to quiet her, though I don't know why. I cover her mouth with my hand, and I swear I see steam when her breath hits the skin of my hand. I hold her down, and she wraps her legs around my waist, pulling me deeper inside and warming me until I can hardly tell where life ends and I begin. It doesn't take long after that. I whisper in her ear and command her to come. She obeys, glowing even brighter and shaking for a moment before falling limp under my body. I come a few seconds later, watching the changes on her skin in awe as she comes down off the orgasm. Afterwards, we lie together on the leaves, limbs intertwined, breathing softly. I trail my fingers over the marks I made on her skin, and she shudders. I'll always win in the end, I tell her softly. She nods and curls against me, arms holding me tight against her body. Her breath is still coming fast as she recovers. She knows that I'm the one who will be left standing, someday, an eternity in the future. Life must end. I am what follows. I'm dreading it, and I can't wait for it. I hate to even admit it, but she is dimmed. Her fire is more of a smolder now. Still indescribably lovely, but diminished. I'll have her for another few hours, but then she must leave. I want to touch her forehead, like I do the mortals, softly, to take her with me and move on to the next place. But I don't think she could exist outside of this world, and I refuse to exist without her. Songs and tears are still echoing from the mortals just feet away in the cemetery. They're so completely unaware of the offering life has just made to me, so near their celebrations. So we linger for a while, balanced, lying in the fallen leaves. I hold on to as much of her fire as I dare, already dreaming about the next time the veil thins. This has been a reading of Life and Death by user Calling Birdie.